Hi everyone, it's Deb with the Starving for God workshop, and gosh, I'm so excited to connect with you all today. We've had a couple weeks break here, so I miss you. Let's find out who else is on the call today. So go ahead and unmute yourself by pressing star 6 and just announce your name and where you're from and what you got.
Hi, I'm Lynn, a compulsive eater, drug addict from Sherman Oaks, California.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, I'm Pam, compulsive overeater from San Diego, California.
Hey, Pam.
I'm Stephanie, food addict from Livermore, California.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, I'm Carol, compulsive overeater from England. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, this is Deb from San Diego, compulsive overeater, food addict.
Hi, Deb.
And other things.
Yeah. Yeah. We all got lots of things.
And I'm Deborah from Encinitas, compulsive food addict, overeater.
Hi, Deborah.
Hello.
Got lots of Debbies here today. Debbies are representing. All right. Well, welcome to anyone who joins on the call after I get started here. I wanted to, before we go into our prayer and meditation and really dive into the meat of our talk today, it's funny because I have this, like, this complex about 8 and 9, and I'm like, gosh, I don't know what I'm going to say, and blah, blah. And then I just prayed this morning. I sat down, and, like, I couldn't stop writing. Oh, my gosh, so much came out. So I'm really excited for whatever flows through today. I totally trust it. But I did want to just reference where we are in the sponsorship guide. So, again, if you are new to this call, if you're new to this workshop, all of the tools for the workshop are available to you online. You can print them out. You can start the work whenever you want with the first recording. You get the materials. You get the sponsorship guide. You grab a step partner, and you're good to go. So you really have all the tools that you need. So referencing the sponsorship guide, of course, this is version 5.0. We are actually in meeting 20, which is where we get to talk about 8 and 9, essentially. So the way I'm going to do the rest of the workshop, because we have 3 more weeks, it's so crazy, like today and then next week and then the week after that, and we're actually done. So we're finishing in March. So crazy. I feel like we've had a baby together. Well, we have had a baby together, almost, right? We're 6 months to term, right? But so this week we're 8 and 9. And you're going to have the tools to write out your cards and then get with your sponsor, your step guide. I know I'm working directly with a couple of you, so you can call me. You're going to sit and you're going to lay out all your cards. You're going to bring your cards. You need to sit with your sponsor. You need to sit with your sponsor or your step guide. You need to go through your cards with that person. Because you're going to identify which of the cards that you're actually going to go out and make amends on, which ones you're going to maybe take some other action on. And then once you're clear on the amends that you're willing to do and they're in a local area for you to get to, you're going to sit down, you're going to spread out those cards out in front of you, and you're going to ask to be guided, the first 3 that jump out to you. That for you to go and make those amends. And then from here on until you finish, until you complete all of your amends, you're going to every week do the same thing. You're going to pick 3. You're going to meet with your step partner or talk about whatever, and then you're going to go out into the world. You're going to make those amends, and then the next week you start with the next 3. And you're going to go from your willing pile. We're going to talk about all that in a second or in a little bit about what this means. You're going to go from your willing pile, and your willing cards are going to help you become willing to do your unwilling cards. And you're going to still do your unwilling cards, and your local cards will give you the willingness to do your unlocal cards. We're going to talk about all that kind of stuff. But so the 9th step truly is, just like they say on page 84, that we continue What does it say? It says, we continue to take personal inventory, continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. And, of course, that's step 10, but we're going to continue to do our ninth step. So just because we're doing sort of 8 and 9 this week doesn't mean that we sort of talk about it and you kind of make a half-assed attempt to do one amends, and then, like, your cards just sit there in your index box and you don't look at them again. And the only reason why I'm saying it that way is because I have done that. And I don't do that anymore, and I don't recommend that you do that because we really won't get free unless we're doing these amends and doing all of our amends. Next week, we're going to be doing 10 and 11. So that's pages 84 to 88. You've been hearing me talk about 84 to 88 the entire last 6 months. So now we actually legitimately are on steps 10 and 11, and we're going to be deep diving into 84 to 88. And if you are current with where we are in the workshop, I know a lot of folks are joining the call to be a part of the fellowship, but they aren't actually where we are, and that's okay. But if you are where we are right now, then you, you know, you might be experiencing some of these promises, and that's really freaking cool. So the next week, 10 and 11, the next week after that is step 12, and then, my friends, we are done with this workshop. It's so crazy. I have been getting a lot of guidance from Spirit about next steps and where to sort of take all of this content and where to take all of, like, the recordings that, like, they're constantly channeling through and that I just, you know, kind of email off to you guys and want to send to you guys. And so I'll be sharing more about that in the coming weeks, about where you can access all of this stuff for the long term and about ongoing recordings and various things that I'll be doing. So I'm not going to be losing entire contact with you, but we definitely are complete with the steps for now. Okay, the last thing I want to say before we get into our prayer meditation is transcribing. I cannot emphasize this enough because I've done it both ways. I have done, you know, I kind of was like really, really good on my transcribing into like the first half of step 4 and then kind of just let it go and, you know, like let it go and let it go. And then all of a sudden it's like my step 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 are not transcribed. I've done it that way. And I promise you, and I've done it the other way where everything is transcribed. I promise you, it makes a huge, huge difference. And for those of you who haven't done your fifth step yet, please transcribe your fifth step before you go into it because it's going to illuminate some of the things that you want to be considering as you go into it. And the same thing with your 6 and 7. Like when you're sitting with this stuff and you're making notes and you are reading, oh, okay, so it's asking me if I, you know, if my foundation's firmly in place and if I've skipped on any, you know, like sand or whatever. It's going to use these references of, you know, is my cornerstone in place, is my keystone in place. You're transcribing on this, and you get a sense of, okay, I understand what's going to happen here. So when you get to that place, you're ready for it. And the same thing with steps 8 and 9. Because even as I was going through my notes today or going through the book and just looking to see what wanted to be shared, I saw so many critical, valuable, important notes that really will expand and enlarge and elevate your experience, and I believe in my own experience, take you further in your recovery. Like I know I said this at the very, very beginning of our workshop, but the BBA isn't doing the Idiot's Guide. Like the BBA, that's the Idiot's Guide is a part of the BBA, but the BBA is about taking the words out of this big book and taking these sentences and turning them into questions and having an experience with that. And the, you know, it becomes tedious, and that's part of the process too. So, oops, let me just mute somebody here. We've got the interpreter. Okay. So anyway, that was good because that just, like, got me off my soapbox. I'm stepping off my soapbox, you're transcribing, I'm moving on. Okay, so let's say our set-aside prayer, and today, let's say, you know, God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me to see the truth about the harms I've caused and my need to set right my wrongs. Okay, so and then we'll go into a few minutes of meditation. So, God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me to see the truth about the harms I've caused and my need to set right my wrongs. Okay, so steps 8 and 9. So, you know, I keep on saying steps 8 and 9, and yet really they are very distinct steps, and it's important to fully be in 8 and to make the lift to fully be in the experience of 8, and then when we get into 9, to fully be in the experience of 9. See, a lot of us get stuck, and we say, oh, I'm in step 9. We're not taking action, but we say we're in step 9. And really what we're doing is we're actually stuck in 8. You know, and when we get stuck in any one of these steps, but particularly in steps 8 and 9, it's not about, you know, I'm not stuck in step 9 because I'm not fully getting my step 8. I'm stuck in step 9 because I've somehow gotten separated from my first step experience. This book is going to link the first step and the 9th step multiple times in this section that we're looking at today. So just look for that. And usually when I've been separated from the first step experience, Well, sometimes it might be, like, one of the experiences that might be possible is that you're actually feeling pretty good. Like, maybe you did your fifth step. Well, obviously, if you actually are at step 8 and 9, you've done your fifth step. And maybe you're experiencing some of those promises. You know, 5, 6, and 7, once you do 7, it can feel pretty juicy. Like, for me, it's like, you know, step 3 and step 7 are kind of those dangerous places where it kind of feels good to hang out for a little bit. So maybe you're feeling good, but most likely what's happened to a lot of us is that fear has crept back in. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But for me, the fear of looking bad creeps back in. I start to justify here. I start to justify things. And life starts to get really busy all of a sudden, you know. And I'm just saying, just reminding you, as I'm reminding myself, this is not the time to balk at all. We're right there, right at the precipice. It's just, it's amazing. This step is amazing. So like I said, there's a huge difference between steps 8 and steps 9. And as Dan Sherman always says, you know, step 9 even has like a different posture for prayer. You know, like some of us pray with our hands clasped at our hearts, and some people pray with their, you know, their palms face up in their laps. And then the 9th step, this is how you pray. You sit down, you put both feet flat on the floor, your spine straight, you take the phone, put it in your hand, you dial the number, it starts to ring, and then you start to pray. It really is. It's, I mean, you know, I know I make a joke, but it's an action step. And so if I'm not actively knocking on doors and picking up phones and having conversations, then I'm actually in my step 8. So that's important to know. And when I say that this is so powerful, step 8 and 9, it's also because this is where I literally meet my maker. Like, this is where I get to experience the power of God that I've accessed in steps 1 through 8. I get to experience, as I'm going out there into the world and as I'm making these amends and I'm needing to pull in as much God as I can, I'm praying, I'm fearful, I don't want to go do these things, they're uncomfortable, they're icky, all of the above. And I need so much God that this is where I actually turn to full-on reliance upon that power. And unless I'm giving myself the opportunity to fully turn and rely on that power, then I'm not actually following through with my 3rd step decision. You know? So, and that's why it says in the book, faith without works is dead. You know, so let's actually go into the book. We are on page 76. And about halfway down here, because we're no longer on step 6 and step 7. But now it says in the middle of the paragraph, middle of the page there, we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. This is what's so great about the way that we do the work in the Big Book Awakening, is that it's all laid out for us and everything sequentially follows the next thing. And so you'll remember that on your 4th step, in the 4th column, at the bottom it says, write any specific harms that came up, or you do the same thing on your sex inventory, write any specific harms that came up. Because I'm now going to reference back to those for my amends list. And you know, this, I'm going to say this a few times, probably at different points, but I'll say it right now. It's really, really important to get with your sponsor or your step partner, your step guide, and go through each situation before you actually go out into the world and make amends. Because I, in the past, have written amends cards of harms that I caused, and after meeting with my sponsor, and for reasons that I'll go into further on in our call today, it was actually going to be more harmful to go and to make that amends, and there were some other steps that I needed to take. And so it's really, really important to go through, but that is our first reference point, is to go back to our 4-step inventory and to write down those harms. We're also going to, and I like to take it to prayer and meditation for a week, like just, you know, like every day, just asking in some quiet time, you know, God, please help me see the truth about the harms that I've caused, and, you know, please point out any amends that I need to make. And I just, you know, sit there with my pad of paper and my pen, and I just listen for any guidance that I get, and I just write down any of the names, even if I'm not sure what the amend is, I just write down the name if it comes to me, and I continue to pray, you know, for clarity and guidance. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Oh, and the other thing that I want to, and this is why it's important to transcribe, but it says, I have in my notes here, I am not others. Okay, maybe that's either a transcription or maybe that's just my personal note. I have to get clear that I'm not others. I write that there because I feel like sometimes we can't, especially those of us with food addictions or Al-Anon addictions, chaos creating, you know, all this kind of stuff where we're kind of like abusing ourselves. I mean, all addicts are abusing themselves, but... is that I feel like we feel guided to put ourselves on our amends list, and like we need to make an amends to ourselves. And, you know, the thing is, and just take this to some prayer and meditation, obviously do what you feel guided to do. I'm going to say two things about that. The first one is the amends that you're, and I'm actually going to talk a little bit more about it in depth a little bit later on. The amends that you're making with other people is on your behalf and their behalf. It is how you make an amends to yourself. It is how you go out and you heal all of those sort of like broken links that are out there in the world. And in doing that, you actually heal. So it's the most honorable thing that you can do for yourself to go out and to make amends with other people. So I would almost say if you feel like that's coming up for you to make an amends to yourself, is to actually go out and make every single one of your other amends, including your financial amends, like every single amend, and then take it to prayer and meditation again. If you feel guided to do an amends with yourself, then, you know, do as you're guided. And there are some exceptions to that. And, you know, with my coaching clients, like sometimes we'll do some kind of ceremony that's like an amend to their body or, you know, things like that. Like there are ways that that might show up for you, and if that's what you're really feeling strongly guided towards, I totally honor that, but I just wanted to make a note of that. Now we go to our fellows and we repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. So this step 8 and step 9 are constant prayer and meditation steps as well. That's been my experience. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any length for victory over acting out around food and our bodies. And again, I'll just reiterate that my unwillingness to go out into the world and to do these things is about my step 1. So there's one of those references right there. This is like a little bit of a digression, but not really. But this is one of the ways that I kind of consider this concept of amends is that I consider that my spirit has been shattered into. So this is a bit of a digression. I'm just letting you know. This is not out of the BBA or out of the big book. I'm just letting you know this is kind of my own personal digression. My spirit has been shattered into like millions and millions of pieces and scattered across time and space. And it's sitting in all of these, it's like fossilized and anchored in all of these experiences throughout my life where I've assigned shame or guilt or resentment or, you know, like fill in the blank, right? Like regret, all that kind of stuff. And so I feel like there's all parts of me that aren't here in present time where healing can happen and occur. And so what amends do for me personally is that I actually feel myself like galvanizing my spirit again. I feel like every single amend that I make like unlocks one of those fossils or like lifts up one of those anchors and it starts to come back into me. And I start to experience my own sense of recovery and empowerment and wholeness as I go out and set right the mistakes and the wrongs and the things that I did out there in the world. It's really, really amazing, and that's why I have experienced that the best amends that I can make to myself is to actually go out and heal. And heal, you know, all of those relationships and you know, set right any wrongs that I've committed in the past. It's actually the most loving thing that I can do for myself. Okay, so then it goes on. In the next paragraph, it says, as we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident, which means like hesitant, about going out to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. Some people we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them at the moment we are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. And I love this sentence right here. It's going to tell me what my real purpose is. Pretty cool. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. That's it. You know, again, in step three, I'm like, God, what's the role you've assigned me? What's the job you want me to do? What's my purpose? What's my, I'm an agent. Like, you know, you're my principal. Like, assign me my duty. Give me my assignment. And we just got our assignment. That's my purpose, to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and to the people about me. And so, it's going to go on here, you know. So I just want to make a note of. I just want to make a couple notes really quick, because one of the things that you're going to transcribe on at the bottom of page 76 is what you're supposed to do going through your entire list. So after you've like written all of your harms down, and I like to first do it on a like on a piece of paper. I write the name. I write the harm. If I'm not sure what the harm is, I write pray, and I continue to pray on any other names that appear on that. And then what the transcription is going to tell me, like I'm going to go through this whole list, I'm going to pause in prayer at each name, and I'm going to ask, you know, I'm going to ask some questions, and we're going to get to that in a little bit further, a little bit later. But I just want to make a note why like it's really, really important to do these transcriptions. So on the top of page 77, it's talking about like really praying about the timing and the approach. And, you know, the way they write it here is, it's seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we've gone religious. And the prize ring would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded as fanatics or religious bores? We may kill any future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. So it's talking about, I mean, for me, it's talking about two things. First off, it's definitely making this very clear point that I'm not just, you know, oh, yeah, I found God, and therefore you should accept this amends to me. Like, that would, gosh, that would put me off if I heard that from somebody else. But also, if somebody's still smarting, if somebody is still hurt by me, you know, just because I feel remorse and I want to go make an amends, I really have to check my motives. Am I just trying to get something off my chest so I literally don't feel so bad anymore? Because if they're still smarting, it might not actually be appropriate or helpful or healing for me to go to them prematurely. And so I really need to check my motives. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later on today. But throughout this process of 8 and 9, I need to constantly check in and really, really get clear. And this, again, is why it's so important to work with a sponsor or a step guide, someone who's been through the DBA who can guide you in this way. Because for me personally, my ego wants to get in there, and I want the amends to look a certain way. I want a certain outcome. I want to feel a certain way afterwards. I want them to feel a certain way afterwards. I have like all of these attachments. And if things don't go that way, then I start to go down this, like, shame spiral or this doubt and this fear, or I fucked up, I did it wrong, and, I kind of go back into that selfish, self-centered place. And that's, like, the absolute opposite of what we're going for here. We're going for more power, more freedom. So it's really important to get to be able to ask God to get you free of those attachments as you do this process. So the paragraph goes on page 77. It's that first full paragraph. He is going to be more interested in the demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discovery. So the way that we transcribe that actually is, do I believe that the people being approached will be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in my talk of spiritual discoveries? And this is great because you're a person too, so you can put yourself in that person's shoes and you can consider, like, how would I want to receive this? What would feel good for me? What would feel helpful and healing for me? And what would get me free if I, you know, if the other person was me and I was that person? And just consider that. But it also says in the next paragraph, we don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God, when it will serve any good purpose. We are willing to announce our convictions with tact and with common sense. And again, this is why it's so important to pray, to ask to be guided. I mean, oftentimes I will go into an amends, like I've gotten really, really clear on what the amends is. I have my languaging. I've, like, practice the approach with my sponsor. But even in the amends, I'm like still asking God to guide me and still saying thy will be done and still listening for anything that wants to come through in that moment. And so I kind of, like, as I walk into an amends, I actually invite God to walk ahead of me and to, like, sit either before me, or like I'm like sitting in God's lap, or like I am, like I kind of like I personify this experience of God actually being there or speaking through me, so that I can continue to be in that place of just listening and saying what, you know. So if there's if it makes sense for me to talk about my, like, my spiritual convictions in that moment, that I'm listening for that and I can speak into that. So the paragraph goes on to, and I love this because, I mean, gosh, if you haven't already, and I'm sure you have, I know I'm talking to a lot of seasoned program people, invariably you're going to, or you have made amends to people who you're like, yeah, but what you did was worse than what I did. So it says, it may be that he has done more harm than we have done to him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude towards him, we're still not too keen about admitting our faults. I mean, right? Like, they so know me in this book. They know that that is me, that they know that I'm like, yeah, I can make amends for, you know, judging you, but, like, you verbally abused me for 20 years, you know? Like, that's where my, like, egoic mind wants to go, right? Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. And I have experienced that to be true over and over and over again. There is something, again, so humbling and so profound by saying, okay, God, see, when my real purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me, then I can get over my fear of looking bad, or how about this one, my delusion that I'm right. I really suffer from that delusion. And it's in these moments where I say, okay, God, I surrender my need to be right, my need to be better than, you know, and I want to fit myself to be of maximum service to you and the people about me. And so it's not about that person and what they did. This is actually about my relationship, my agreement, my covenant with you, God. And so show me who you'll have me be. And that's why it's more beneficial to me, because it takes a deeper level of grace, humility, and surrender, and willingness, and honesty, and trust, and open-mindedness. It takes the whole thing. And so we go to this person in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feelings and expressing our regret. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell that person that I don't really do it this way. I think I know what they're trying to say here, but I don't know that telling someone, hey, I'm not going to get over my compulsive overeating until I've done my utmost to straighten out the past, and that means I got to do this. I the way that this is worded, I don't know that would actually, if I was on the receiving end of that, like, okay, so this is all about you. I don't get that. So, but the next sentence I really, really relate to, and it says, we are there to sweep off our side of the street. And this is like neon flashing lights, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Record scratch, like what did they just say? They just said that we're here to sweep off our side of the street. Sweep off our side. They're not saying like sweep off just a portion of the side of the street and leave a couple of a little bit of like candy wrappers and crumpled leaves and a little bit of dust. Like they're saying like completely clean it, sweep off our side of the street, which means like complete all of my amends. And that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until I do that. And so it's telling me that I have to complete all of my amends in order to actually get the freedom that this program is talking about. And in Big Book Awakening, I know maybe in some other rooms they'll say, like, you can never complete all your amends. Like, there's people in our group who have completed all their amends. And I thought I had, but then a new amends has just cropped up this year, and I will have completed it once I take certain action, which is happening in May. So, there is a major, major difference between completed amends and not completed amends. And one of the transcriptions that we get at the bottom of the page, one of the things that we transcribe, rather, at the bottom of the page on 77 is invaluable. And in fact, not only do I use this particular information that I'm about to share with you for my own knowledge and appreciation of what it is that I'm doing in the amends process, but sometimes I actually share this with people who I'm doing my amends with. See, my family, like, I'm the first person that's ever done a 12-step program, and amends are not really something that, like, we do, like, that's in our frame of reference. And so I feel like sometimes, and what happened with me is that the person who I'm meeting with feels this pressure. They don't know what they're supposed to do, and they feel like they might have to do something, or there is some kind of, and maybe they haven't voiced this to you, but you can kind of sense it from them, is that they don't want to be put in a position where you're going to apologize for something, and then they're forced then to forgive you, even though they don't actually forgive that behavior. And so there's lots of stuff that might be going on for the person that you are wanting to make an amends to. And so what I was guided to do in a couple of my amends with my certain family members was when I sat down with them, I said, thank you so much for meeting with me. And I want to just clarify what we're about to do here and just clarify like the difference between an apology and an amends, which is what I'm going to share with you right now. And you're going to transcribe when you get to this part of the work. So an apology is a polite gesture that sometimes does not imply admission of guilt or regret, but only a desire to clear the grounds for some reason. And we've all gotten apologies, right? Yeah, I'm sorry. And I mean, you've probably received apologies before, and you're like, you probably actually said in your lifetime to somebody, you know what? I don't actually need that apology because it's falling flat on me. like it doesn't actually, like it doesn't carry any weight for me. And you probably have also made apologies to people, and like as you're saying the apology, you feel empty with it because you don't even know how you could ever never do that again. And it's like you do really feel sorry, but it's like there's no depth to it, even though you feel really, really bad, really remorseful. It like doesn't have any space to really ground as something that's a permanent change. Whereas amends is to formally compensate others for the harm I caused them with a sincere desire to correct my behavior of the past and for the future, to make right my wrongs. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Formally compensate others for the harm that I have caused. So this is like, we're talking about sins. We're talking about sins to the spirit. You know, that's the difference for me about like when I'm talking about the harms that I've caused versus like my selfish actions from my fourth column. Some of my actions will appear as harms, but when I'm dealing with harms, like this is how I have sinned, you know, it's deeper. And that's where amends meet the, you know, like that's why we need an amends. We need something that is grounded, that is more meaty. And my commitment to correct my behavior is more meaty. And that's the difference. And it's my commitment to correct my behavior, not just of the past, but to continue to live into that as I grow in understanding the effectiveness of God's will for me and as I enlarge my spiritual life. And this, I believe, and we're going to talk about it in a little bit again, maybe, but this is where I believe that the living amends has a place. See, a lot of folks, will go the route of living amends without actually doing a formal amends, and they kind of skip over the formal amends because it's like, no, I just need to, like, live this one out with this person. And the way we do it in the BBA and the way that I personally do it in my practice and what's worked for me is living amends is an and. It's not an or. So I go out and I do my actual amends. I own my shit. And then I will live into that as I continue to turn, to God for the power to do something different, because I don't have the power to do something different. That's what I need more power for. Okay. So I'm at the top of 76, and again, I just want to finish that thought of, doing an amends with somebody who we feel like has done more harm than we have. His faults are not discussed. That is hard in the amends process. I have experienced that firsthand where and as I go through kind of the specific way and outline the specific way that we do it, there are multiple times where I give that person the opportunity to share how any of this made them feel. And if there's anything that they need me to know about that I didn't already amend, you know, that I didn't already say, this is what I'm aware of, these are the harms that I've caused, are there any other harms that I'm not aware of or that I didn't mention you want to make me aware of? And I have had amends where I have gotten shat upon by somebody. And it's been really, really challenging. And the first time it happened, it was actually my first amends that I ever did. And it was mortifying to me. I happened to be in a foreign country, and I didn't have any program people. I didn't have my sponsor. She was actually in another foreign country. And it was with a family member, and I didn't have the tools, and I was like I was all ego. I was all attachment to the outcome. Like I had a total vision for how this conversation was supposed to go, and it didn't go that way. And I was mortified, and so that's why I have firsthand experience about this attachment, this ego attachment thing. But we don't, like, it wasn't for me to retort or to respond or to justify or to explain or to say anything. I literally just sat there. And today, when people do that to me, if they do that to me, I have the tools that I'll share with you to sit through that, feeling connected to my creator while somebody shares what they need to share in order for them to get free. Like, I don't get corded to it. I don't get pulled in their undertow. But one thing that I don't do is discuss any of their faults. Yeah, but, or justify or explain or anything like that. Okay, so it's going to now, in the book, pages 78 and 79, 80, it's going to now, like almost every paragraph is going to talk about a particular subset of amends. And so you can essentially, this becomes your textbook, where you can go through and you can say, okay, well, yeah, I have some money amends. So it's like middle of the page on 76, it talks about people that we owe money to and what we should do. And it says we don't dodge our creditors. And one of the things that we practice in the Big Book Awakening format, and I'm sure you think this is the only place that practices it this way, but this is kind of one of the things that we do is, we don't just pay off like one at a time, like, okay, I'm going to pay off this person, and then once I'm fully paid off with that person, then I move to the next person. We do it, and you can actually, you know who's a good person to listen to their recording from the BBA Works website? If you listen to Joe Steve's recording on steps 8 and 9, I think it's from his 2013 recording. Maybe there's a newer workshop on there, I don't know. But he talks about how with his money amends, he has like, I don't know, like something crazy, like 13 or 12 different, you know, places that he had stolen from, or multiple. I can't even remember how many. Maybe it was more, maybe it was less. But he literally would go every week and he would go get like 13 different money orders. And he'd be like, okay, I need $5 to this and $10 to this and da, da, da. And he would just divvy it up and he would pay a little bit to each creditor. And so over time, it took him a number of years, but over time he paid everyone off, but he was able to actually start the amends process, which with all of the different creditors that he owed or people that he owed money to. So again, if you're someone who owes money, you want to get with your sponsor, your step guide, and you want to figure out what that payment plan is going to look like. Obviously, when I say get with your sponsor and get with your step guide, after you get with God, right? After you get with God. The next paragraph is going to talk about criminal offenses. So it's going to tell me what to do in the case of if I have been in trouble with the law. And then the next one is going to talk about divorce issues or alimony issues, so I can reference that. And I'm just reading some of my notes here on the top of page 79 here. So I want to make it, because this is kind of, this is in the section of alimony and divorce and these kinds of things, but I feel like there's certain parts here where you can sort of extract it and apply it to any amends process. So the first full paragraph on page 79. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any length to find a spiritual experience, that is that first step and third step choice or decision, we ask that we be given the strength and the direction to do the right thing no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or our reputation, or face jail, but we are willing, we have to be. We must not shrink at anything. And again, this is where that fear of looking bad is going to come in big time. And I have to be willing to give it all up and then allow God to take it from there. And the next paragraph says, usually, however, other people, when other people are involved, we are not to be hasty or foolish martyrs who would needlessly sacrifice them to save ourselves. And so this kind of goes into one of the things that I talk about and that has been, you know, that my sponsors talk to me about and my step guide who've taken me through the work is when it comes to relationships or, you know, like, so for me, it's like that's an example, like an ex-boyfriend or something like that, but it can happen in multiple environments. But let's say that you do your amend, or you do your, you write out your step, your eight list. You're clear that you have harmed this person from your past, and you want to make an amends. You really want to make an amends to this person. But this person, who maybe was an ex-boyfriend, has moved on and maybe has a family now and has another partner in their life. And is it going to be more harm to actually go to that person just to save yourself, right? Like, oh, I just need to get this off my chest. I just need you to know this. Like, this happened to me where there was a man who I hurt so deeply. I hurt so deeply. He was unavailable, unavailable, unavailable. And then something happened in his life, and he completely opened his heart and his soul to me, like fully. I wish that at the time I was mature enough to receive his love. It was beautiful. And I led him on, and I was dating somebody else, and I was back and forth, and it was like when I was, you know, breaking up with the other guy and having problems with him on the weekend, I'd get together with this guy, and then I mean, it was like, it was chaos like you can't believe. And I broke his heart deeply. And when I did my amends process the first time in the BBA, I got so clear on how deeply I owed this man an amends. And I go to my session, my meeting with my sponsor, and I sit down, and I'm like, I owe this amends to this person. And she looked at me, and she was like, Is this person in a relationship? Has this person moved on? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure they have. She's like, can you check? Can you check with somebody who knows him? And I said, I can. And I did. And he was. And she was like, you have no right contacting him to get yourself feeling better. You know, because I wanted him to know, like, I get what I did, and it was wrong, and you're such a great guy, and, like, I don't need to be with you, but I just want you to know, and I'm different, and da-da-da-da. And she's like, that is all about you. That is not about getting him free. And it was so difficult for me to not go out and to do that amends, and rather to write a letter to him and to read it to her and to ask God to shape my sound sex ideals, I moved forward into the world, but I never did that to anybody else again. And I use that as, you know, a reflection and a source of hope. You know, that's what I used to be like, and I'm no longer like that anymore. So it's really, really important that we aren't just, like it says, hasty and foolish martyrs who would needlessly sacrifice others to save ourselves from our compulsive overeating and restricting pit. And then the next, the paragraph at the bottom of the page is 79, just the first sentence there, it says, we thought he ought to be willing to do that if necessary. You know, it was talking about this guy who was, you know, facing an arrest, and if he turned himself in, he wouldn't be able to, like, fulfill, you know, like, supporting two families and all this kind of stuff. But it's not for him to decide. You know, it's not for each one of us to decide, oh, well, the repercussions are going to be so insane or intense that I can't do that thing. It's not for us to try to manage or figure out how something should look. It says we ought to be willing to give it all up, our position, our reputation, or even face jail. And then at the top of the page, on page 80, see, I have so much to share with you guys. Oh, my God. My throat is like, stop talking. You guys are probably like, stop talking. Sorry, but I got a little bit more. So at the top of page 80, before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we must secure their consent. If we've obtained permission, have consulted with others, asked God to help, and drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink. Tyla tells a really good story about this. I highly recommend that you listen to her recording on steps 8 and 9, because she has some direct experience with this, where there was something that she really wanted to go to the feds about, and she wanted to get clean from, and she contacted the person who would have been implicated as well, and they said no, and so she was not able to go and to implicate them in her, you know, wanting to get clean. And so it talks about that. And again, if you have one of those situations, you're going to be getting with your sponsor or your step guide, or reaching out to somebody in the Big Book Awakening who you want to run your particular situation by, and you're going to get your guidance. Of course, after going to God. So at the bottom, kind of the full paragraph just before the bottom of 80, so after consulting with his wife and partner, a couple lines down here, it says, he saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands or he would soon start acting out around food in his body. And all would be lost anyhow. I was just speaking with a friend in program a couple days ago, and we were talking about this very thing, that no matter what situation is going on in your life, no matter how your disease mind or your ego mind or your self-will mind wants to control or manage, it's so, so important to just place everything in God's hands and trust that God's got this. And God is going to guide you. The next two paragraphs go into cheating and having domestic troubles. So again, if cheating and having domestic troubles are a part of your story, you're going to want to reference this. You're going to want to get really clear and pray on it and speak with your sponsor or your step guide. But when we can just consider the partners in our lives or even just our family members, it says on page 81, a couple lines down here, after a few years with an overeating or restricting partner or a person, a partner gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could he or she be anything else? And then you begin to feel lonely and sorry for yourself and, shame and blame and all this kind of stuff that just kind of like goes, snowballs from there. So a lot of us are having domestic troubles, acting out in a relationship. If that is you, then you're going to want to reference this section. And that kind of takes us through the rest of the page of 81. Going to page 82 here, and I like this, the last sentence that kind of gives to this topic. In the first full paragraph, the second sentence there, it says, no outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. It's the same thing they talk to us about in like the sex inventory, where it's like no one can be the arbiter of anyone else's sex conduct. This is the same thing. At the end, whatever you have going on in your domestic relationship, this is between you and that person and God, and you need to find your truth within that. And so you're going to speak with your sponsor, your step guide. You're going to take this to prayer. You might speak to a spiritual counselor or something like that. But in the end, this is about like what feels right and honorable. And it says each might pray about it, having the other one's happiness and uppermost in mind. And so this is for you and your partner to work out about what is the most honoring thing to be able to do for each other. And then the middle of the paragraph, or the middle of the page on 82, it goes into, if we have no such complications, there is still plenty that we need to do at home. Sometimes we hear an overeater restrictor say that the only thing he or she needs to do is to keep abstinent from acting out around food. Certainly, he or she must keep abstinent from acting out, for there would be no home if she didn't. But she is yet a long way from making good to the partners and family for whom years have had shocking treatment. And then this beautiful little analogy here. It's like the overeater restrictor is like a tornado roaring her way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. And then it says, it's like the farmer who comes out of the cyclone cellar to find his home in ruin to say to his wife, "Don't see anything the matter here. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" So we get the idea. We get what they're trying to say here. There's so much more that we need to do beyond just not acting out around food in our bodies. There is a lot that needs to be healed and repaired, and like it says at the top of 83, a long period of reconstruction. And by the time I'm getting to this place in the work, again, this is where I go from the, you know, this is part of my living amends, is the prayer it's going to give me at the end of this paragraph. This is a part of how I carry this work forward into every day. It says, we must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fit the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. That's where I need God, by the way. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. I love this, and in fact, oftentimes I start my 84 to 88 with just a review of some key phrases on page 83, this being one of them. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. I love that. Try that. Try that for a week and just see how your family and relationships transform. Just that prayer. God, please show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. And I extend that and I add to that with me and the world around me. With my family, with me and my world around me. Because I'm also one of God's kids. And I want God to please help me be patient, tolerant, kind, and love to my and loving to myself, because oftentimes I'm not able to do that on my own power. This is a beautiful way to start your day. And then one of the best lines in the book: the spiritual life is not a theory; we have to live it. And this textbook that we call the big book. This is showing me how to live a spiritual life. This gives me countless prayers. I call this practical spirituality. It gives me countless prayers, countless ways to show up in the world in a very, very practical way. And being actively involved in my ninth step and being actively involved in prayer and meditation is how I do that. This I have learned the hard way. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think it ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. I have made that mistake many times. They will change in time, and I have also experienced that. I have experienced the miracles of people in my family reaching for programs where they never in a million years would have, and it has everything to do with God taking me to a place of truly being of service instead of being in my self-will run riot, which was advice-giving and judgment and trying to point out where people can grow. That, newsflash, doesn't work. Our behavior, however, will convince them more than our words, and I have experienced that to be true over and over and over again. Over and over again. Okay, so it does make mention there are some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them. If we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. There might be people that you just truly can't get in contact with. I had someone who I made the approach to, someone from high school, who I believe that I harmed. I made the approach to her, but I couldn't find her. I didn't know her. Tried to find her on Facebook. I didn't know her new last name. And I contacted my high school, and all they were, you know, able to do really was to let her know that I was trying to contact her, and if she wanted to respond and give her contact details, that she could. And, you know, like, wouldn't you know, she didn't. And so I was like, gosh, I really don't know how to make this amends. Well, so I just went to my 20-year high school reunion last night. And she was there. And I was able to make an amends to her. And it was really powerful. And so sometimes we have to just, and she's been in my pray pile for a very long time, for a couple of years, actually. And so it was really cool to be able to actually complete that amends. But some people we actually can't. And just because somebody's dead doesn't mean that you can't do your amends with them. You can do a graveside amends, or you can even, you know, just do, you know, if somebody is in, you know, they've passed through to the other side, then they, you know, you can really do your amends anywhere. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. There might be some people in your life, some relationships, where it's actually they don't have, like, you actually are, like, concerned, like, about their safety for you. And it might be more appropriate for you to write them a letter. Again, these are the specific situations that you're going to be discussing one-on-one with your sponsor and getting really clear on, praying about, and asking to be guided. There may be valid reasons for postponement. Like, for example, in my case, I am one of the amends I need to make is actually moving out of where I am, and so I have my move-in date that is set for mid-May, and that's why it's a postponement right now. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without, I love this, being servile or scraping, without being meek or groveling. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. That is so powerful. I love reading that. Because amends are not about, I'm down here and you're up here, and, you know, some kind of, like, servile and scraping. I love those words. Like, this sort of groveling an apology. That's not where this is coming from at all. In fact, I feel like I am completely hooked up with God as I'm sitting there. And I am allowing God to speak through me, and I'm demonstrating God's love and God's power by my willingness to do something that my ego is saying no. You know, remember a couple calls ago, I said the extent to which my ego says no is the extent to which my spirit will grow, which actually came out of a sit-step that I was doing with one of you. And you know who you are. But this is one of those things. And so in the moment that I'm experiencing the utmost humility and, like, really, really leaning into the discomfort or the fear of not wanting to do something, and feeling the ickiness of that, is the exact type of my willingness to still do it, is the exact time that I'm filled with all of the loving presence and power of God to carry me through that very thing. Okay, so if we are painstaking before we're halfway through, so we read the promises, the nine-step promises all the time. As you know, having been with me over the last 6 months, you know that these are not the only promises in the book. And people are like, we're going to read the promises. Like, you know, you can now say as an educated big book person, which promises are you referring to? Which promises throughout the whole book? But the nine-step promises are pretty powerful, and I have to remind myself that I don't get the promises. They don't fully come to fruition until I complete my amends. When it says we will be amazed before we are halfway through, they're not talking about the steps. They are talking about the ninth step. We will be amazed before we are halfway through the ninth step. And then these are some great terms to take to prayer and meditation. And I know I mentioned this before in previous calls, but we're really here now, so we can talk about it. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And so there's a couple things that I can do with that. You know, I can actually just sit in meditation like, God, please help me to visualize, or help me to see what a new freedom is or what a new freedom might feel like. Help me to experience what a new freedom is. Because, again, in my disease, small-minded kind of perspective, I can't even get there of even conceiving what a new freedom would be like. And so sometimes I need to actually go to God for even for the vision of what a new freedom is. And then in that asking, it opens me up to all of the possibility for God to take me further in every area of my life. Same thing with a new happiness. What does that even mean? I don't even know. I'm so used to restless, irritable, and discontent that happiness is not even, I don't know what that new happiness could even be like. And the same thing with we will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. So, like, look up the word serenity. Look up the word peace. Like, what do these things mean definition-wise, and what do they mean to you? What does peace mean to you? One of the things that I saw when I looked up the word peace was one of the definitions is a state of mutual harmony between people or groups, especially in personal relations. How beautifully does that tie in with everything that we talk about in our fourth step and our fifth step? So it's really nice when we get to the ninth step promises to reference the opposite of the ninth step promises, which are the bedevilments. So if you want to flip back to page 52, and so we're having trouble in personal relationships. Here it says fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. Oh, no, it says we will, well, okay, I'm just going to read all of it because there's a really handy little printout. I don't have it on me right now, but we have this, and I think it's on the BBA Works website, where it literally takes every single phrase of the bedevilment and it kind of has a little arrow and it points to what the promise is. So, you know, like fear of, we can't control our emotional nature, prey to misery and depression, can't make a living, you know, like even just like can't make a living, and then it'll point to, you know, fear of economic insecurity will leave us. Every single one actually has a promise. Every bedevilment has a promise that it's attached to. So maybe somebody who's on this call today actually has the reference for what that third-party website is that has that. I don't know if maybe it's Jaywalker or something like that, or knows where to access that because it's really cool. But we essentially, again, we're linking the first step to the ninth step. And when we're in our spiritual malady, when we are restless, irritable, and discontent, when we are disconnected from that fundamental notion of God that exists within every man, woman, and child, when we're blocked from that, then we're experiencing the bedevilment. But on the other side of that, when we're connected with God, when we're accessing God, when we're relying upon God, when we're growing in understanding of effectiveness and continuing to sweep our side of the street clean on a daily basis and a moment-to-moment basis, we're experiencing these promises. You will know a new freedom and a new happiness. Self-seeking will slip away. You know, you've heard these a lot of times, but this is really, really powerful stuff. And it says it's always going to materialize if I work towards clearing away the things that block me from God. That's going to happen in my continual step 9, in my continual step 10, and my continual step 11 and 12. 9, 10, 11, and 12. I continue to work for them. So I want to reference the Big Book Awakening here because we actually have everything laid out for us about actually what we do. And so if you will turn to, in your Big Book Awakening supplement, if you will turn to page 81, and it literally tells you everything to do. So you're going to have that list. So it says, do each of the following instructions in order. You're going to look through your entire fourth step and any notes that you made in your fifth and sixth step regarding harms you're aware of and make the list. Pray and ask God to show you any more names that need to be on the list. You will know when the list is done. Then you're going to take the names from the list and you're going to write each on a separate 3x5 index card. And it shows you in the Big Book Awakening, if you don't have it with you right now, it actually shows you an example of the index card with how you're going to write out your amends. The name, you know, address, phone number, you know, contact information. If you don't have the address, you're going to write fine. And then the specific harm. If you're not clear on the harm, you're going to write ask on the card. And it means ask God, don't ask the person. Okay, so when we were back on page 76 and I said I'm going to be referring to this again, I'm going to be referring to a transcription here at the bottom of the page, this is where it is. So it says take each amends card one at a time in a meditation. So this is the part on page 76 where it says, probably there's still some misgivings. We may feel diffident, right? We may feel hesitant. And so one of the things that you're going to transcribe here is that you are going to be writing a plus or minus, willing or unwilling, on each card. And so here it's going to describe what that means. So picture yourself, to take each card into meditation, picture yourself going to each person or institution and ask yourself, am I willing to do whatever this person asks of me to set right this wrong? If you are willing to make the amend, you write a plus. If you're unwilling, you write a minus. Okay? So all your cards are going to get plus or minus. Then you're going to further divide your cards into separate piles. And it tells you in the Big Book Awakening on page 81 exactly how to do that. You're going to have a local willing, local unwilling, out-of-state willing, out-of-state unwilling, need to find willing, need to find unwilling. And I also have a separate pile for like my pray pile. And there's two categories for me with the pray pile. The one category is there's no amend, but I'm going to pray for this person. Like for the example of my ex-boyfriend who I wanted to make an amends to, but it's not appropriate for me to make an amends to him. I can write the letter, I can do the process, and I can continue to keep him in my prayers. And the other one is if I'm not clear on the amend and I'm continuing to pray about it, and there is an amend, but I'm going to pray on it. So I do have a pray pile as well. Or there's just like people who have come up in as a result of doing this process who I just want to include in my daily prayer pile. Okay, so when all the cards are completed, review them with your step guide. Consider each amend. Is this really a harm? So it's vital that you get with somebody to really determine is this a harm or not. Because there's going to be things, and I've noticed this with myself, and I noticed this with a lot of people who I've worked with, is that we are so hard on ourselves, and we're like, oh my God, we want to write all of our selfish actions. We want to just put all of those selfish actions on our harms. And it's really this is not your index card is not a place for you just to like write every single selfish action that you had. And it really is to get clear, to ask God to help you see the truth and get really clear on your harms. So when you go to someone, you're not just unloading on them this boatload of stuff that makes them feel like they've got to manage your experience. It's not about that at all. It's about you getting really clear, you being like feeling totally aligned with God as you share these things. And so it's really important to get clear. Is this a harm, and what is that harm? And are there others involved who may get hurt that I should be aware of? And so we spoke about that already. So that is all your step eight, okay? When you're getting into your step nine, now we're talking about the actual approach. And I always recommend face-to-face where you can. Sometimes a phone is appropriate. I am not really a fan of, like, messaging someone on email or Facebook. There have been circumstances where I think I did that, but that was after, like, determining with my sponsor and sitting it with God that that was actually the most appropriate thing to do for whatever reason. I can't remember at the time. I can't remember right now. But for the most part, I'm like, let's meet this person face to face. And there's, you know, I know plenty of people who've gone and they've flown to different cities and they've gone on like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to make all my amends. And it's absolutely possible to complete all your amends and to go out there and to do it. And so if that is what you are wanting to do, go do it. Okay, so this is what you're going to say to them. It's going to tell you exactly what to say. So you're going to tell them why you're here, and I have a couple of, you know, just like little sample things that I've maybe used in the past, but you'll be guided to the way that you're going to say it, the way that feels natural for you. And it's really, again, it's like the facts, right? This is the harm I'm clear on. Are there any other harms that I'm not aware of that you need to tell me about? And then shut up. Let them talk. Do you need to tell me how any of this hurt you? Shut up and let them talk. And is there anything that I can do to make this right? Shut up and let them talk. And, you know, and then it has a note here. If the amend is financial, if necessary, arrange the best payment deal. And it says, remember, you're not giving up your money. You're giving them back theirs. This is one of the things, and I wrote some little notes of just, you know, stuff that I've kind of, well, just some additional kind of pointers and stuff around step eight and step nine that I'm going to share with you in a moment. But one thing that has been suggested to me is that when I ask people, is there anything I can do to make this right, it doesn't mean that I have to do any and everything that that person asks of me. Let's say I'm making an amends to an ex, and that person's like, I want to get back together with you, or to a friend who I don't want to be in relationship with anymore, and that person's like, I want a relationship with you. You, as God's child, walking hand in hand with your Creator, reserve the right to say, thank you. Let me take that to some quiet time, consideration, and get back to you. You're allowed to do that, and that's, you know, that's called having a healthy boundary. So, you know, this is not about people-pleasing or just about committing to something that doesn't feel like it resonates with you. And with that said, be open to who God might have you be in this relationship and in this interaction, because somebody who before you're like, I don't want to be in friendship with them, and then when you actually find out from them that a friendship for them is really just, they just want they want a Christmas card from you every year. They want two phone calls out of the year or something like that. And all of a sudden you're like, you know what, I can actually do that, and that's going to make this person feel fulfilled? Wow. So I want to go through some of my additional notes just from my experience, and then I want to open the call up and hear from some of you people, because I know there's a lot of people with a lot more years of recovery and probably some questions too, and so, I'll, you know, I want to get some discussion going. Okay, I already talked about that. So when considering the harm you've caused, if you're not clear, like, and even if you think you're clear, what I do is I actually imagine that person sitting in front of me in the same way that I was talking about doing that in your step six. Imagine that person sitting in front of you and ask them, what is the specific harm that I've caused you? And just listen. Also, put yourself in the other person's shoes and really consider if your amends will cause further harm to them. So, like, for example, I got really clear that pretty much my conduct in relationship in general in not just romantic relationships, but in all relationships, is that I use people. Like, that's what I do when I'm self-will run riot. I'm using people. That's my interaction with them. It's what can I get out of this situation? How can I get my needs met? And sometimes I got really clear that I use men in a certain way to get what I needed. Now, when I'm going through this with my sponsor, and I'm like, yeah, I caused harm to, you know, Fred or whatever, because I used him. And then she would say to me, now, put yourself in Fred's shoes. Does Fred want to hear from Debbie? And you say, hey, Fred, I just want you to know I need, you know, making an amends to you, and I was just using you. I didn't really like you, but I was wanting to feel needed and supported, and you were kind of helping me get over an ex-boyfriend. No, I don't think Fred wants to hear from you. I don't think he wants to hear that. And so I have to get clear on if my amends is actually going to create more freedom, more liberation, more healing, or if it's actually not going to, in which, you know, I need to pray and talk with my sponsor about how to handle that. Again, just reiterating that we are sticking to the facts without our story, explanation, or justification. And, like, that can sometimes come out in really sneaky ways. Like, I can say, you know, I'm making an amends for being disrespectful, being dismissive, being unsupportive to you. Like my amends to this woman last night, and I acted poorly to you throughout high school. I could have said, you know, I acted really poorly throughout high school. I was going through so much at the time. Like, but that's like additional stuff that is about me. It's not about them. So I don't say that kind of stuff. And I just have some big cap letters. So this is probably more a message for me than it is for you, but I'm going to read it anyway. Amends are not there to make you feel better. They are there to get the other person free. Amends will not always feel good, and you may not like how the other person reacts. If you are clear on your harm and you make your approach with earnestness and willingness to set right your wrongs, then you have done everything you can do. Do not be attached to their reaction or the outcome. That is not yours to manage. Leave that up to God! ! One thing that I do to support me through this, you know, I told you today I have tools to help me that navigate those moments where I'm like afraid to make an amends because I'm afraid of how that other person is going to react. And I'm already pre-qualified. This isn't one of those people that's like super, super unsafe where it's like more, it makes more sense to write a letter. This is someone who I could approach, but I just don't want to hear what they might have to say. So one thing I do is that I pray like crazy. I ask God to walk before me. I do all those things I already talked about. But I also, as I pose that question of, are there any other harms I'm not aware of that you need to tell me about? And as they start to speak, I'm listening. But at the same time, I'm imagining that I have this like this cord to God that has been like inserted into my spine and is pumping me full of light and love and like safety. And I imagine that God is holding me, that I can listen to and be available for what that person is saying to me, but that I'm being held in God's light and God's love, so that that comment doesn't take me under and I don't start to attach who I am with what I did, because they're very, very different. Who I am is a child of God, and who I am is an expression of God. And there are some things that I did when I wasn't in that vibration of remembering who I was. And so I'm listening for ways, you know, I'm listening for that with open ears, but I'm also doing it in a space for me personally where I'm feeling like I'm being held in God's love so that I can have compassion for myself, compassion for the other person, and that I can actually be available for what they have to say. And the same thing about, do you need to tell me how any of this hurt you personally or your company? Because, again, I don't want to hear how I hurt people because it makes me feel bad, and I start to go down a path of self-pity and blame and shame, and I'm so wrong, and da-da-da, and it becomes all about me again. And I need God to remove that from me. So, again, I ask God to just pour into me God's love so that God can hold me while I'm experiencing, like, in the moment of experiencing the immense. It's just a personal thing that I do. Use it if it works for you. Throw it away if it does not work for you. But one thing that I'm clear on, again, is that I'm not here to grovel. And so I need God to hold me so that I can still be strong and centered in my approach and in how I'm showing up in that amends. I also pray for healthy boundaries. And I actually just recorded today something for you all that I will send out either today or this week about boundaries. But, yeah, like this, again, the amends process is not about people-pleasing and saying or doing the thing that you think that they need to hear. And so I pray for God to give me healthy boundaries. One thing that had come up in the past, questions, do you go back to people if you've already made your amends? But you and I want to do it like the BBA way. I don't do it unless the harm to that person is different from the harm that I amended, that I made amends for in the past. If it is, then I will. Otherwise, it's more about you wanting to do a redo than it is about that person really needing to get free. We've already spoken about past relationships and really important that you get clear. You say a prayer. It might be the most appropriate thing might be to say a prayer, write a letter, and read it to your sponsor. Declined amends. If somebody declines your amends, which they reserve the right to do, you can still write it out and you can read it to your sponsor. You can still have a ceremony around that. One thing also that I have noticed is that other people, you know, here we are approaching someone in all earnest wanting to set right our wrongs, but we have to remember that other people aren't usually used to this level of honesty, and a lot of people are really uncomfortable with it. And so what I find happens sometimes is that they want to dismiss or minimize the amends. Like, I'll be like, this is what I'm clear on. I did this, this, and this. And sometimes somebody will be like, yeah, not only that, you did this too. But sometimes someone will be like, they'll actually like minimize, oh, it was, you know, whatever. You just, you know, it was so long ago or, you know, whatever. And they actually minimize it. And you know, there are really delicate ways to handle that. Just because they're minimizing it doesn't mean that you shouldn't have done it, and it doesn't mean that you shouldn't, like, continue with every step of what the amends process is. You're just honoring that that is their reaction. Maybe they didn't yell at you, but their reaction is that they're uncomfortable. And so what I'll do in those situations is I'll say, yeah, I totally get that, and it was really on my heart to be able to share this with you. And so I'd like to just like open up the opportunity or the possibility. If anything comes up to you, you know, because you'll say like, is there anything that I can do to right this wrong? And like sometimes they'll be like, I can't even, this has not been a big deal in the past, whatever. They kind of like, they blow it off. And I'll just say, if anything does come to you, I just want you to know my door is always open and I'm always available and receptive to hear any feedback that you want to give me. And you can just leave it with them, and you're planting seeds, and you're just, you know, again, this is just about you in earnest going and being willing to set right any wrongs. And I've already spoken about this a couple of times, so I don't think I need to share about it again, is the living amends, that it's to be used in conjunction with proper amends and not in place of. A good rule of thumb is, you know, asking myself, is my ego not wanting to look bad? You know, like I have like a fear of looking bad here, and it's going to justify me out of like doing a proper formal amends. I've had sponsees do amends to their dog I've had sponsees do amends with their infants, you know, like it just because somebody isn't compos mentis, you know, like an amends to somebody who's in a coma. It's all fair game. If you feel guided, in fact, I had a sponsee who made an amends to her dog, and it revolutionized her relationship with her dog, her family, her life. It was very, very powerful. It sounds kind of, you can kind of be like, really? It was very, very powerful. So actually doing that formal amends really, really makes a huge difference. And then you can follow up with the living amends of continuing to pray about how you can continue to honor that person. Okay, I already addressed that. Okay, so here are just some, and I mean, again, this is not like, well, I'm not going to, whatever, I'm just going to share some approaches just to give you like a sense of some languaging, and you'll find your own way with it. Some stuff that I've said in the past, like I'm in a spiritual recovery program and I've had the opportunity to take some inventory of my past. And I've seen where I've caused harm to the people in my life. And your name came up as someone who I owe an amends to. And so I'd like the opportunity to meet with you and to set that right. Or, you know, I'm in a spiritual recovery program. I've had an opportunity to take some inventory, you know, see where I've caused harm to the people in my life. And it's been on my heart for a while to speak with you about some harms that I've caused you. So I can make an amends and set things right, you know, and then it's like, would you be willing to meet with me? And you want to meet with them at a neutral place, at a coffee shop, you know, some kind of neutral territory, and give them a kind of an approximate sense of like, is it going to be about 20 minutes? Like, don't, you know, again, they don't know what this process is. You're the one that's coming to them asking for this time, so you're respectful. You're meeting them on neutral ground. You're giving them a time frame so they can feel into it. All that kind of stuff is really going to set you all up for success. So, okay, those are all my notes. I'm going to open up the call right now and would love to just hear comments about your amends experiences, questions. I'm just going to open it up right now. Go ahead and star six yourself if you want to share.
Lauren F.
Hey, Lauren.
Hi, buddy and buddies. My name is Lauren S. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I am currently being a trusted servant in my own, well, not my own, God's BBA group. So we're on week 8. But I thank you for being helpful, Debbie, and my amends were the most emotional, unbelievable time of my life. I would end an amend with my dad, my roommate, an amend that was so heavy, so dear giving, and I would be jumping up and down, screaming, like, with the biggest smile on my face, calling my fellows, I just finished the amends, and I feel so lit up, and I started to get this effect for the first time that I actually never got from food. It was better. It was of freedom. It was like the real juice, you know? Getting clear itself. I have a question that I can ask another time. I'm going to put it out there. It's amends that maybe it's not necessarily appropriate to say I'm in a program of recovery. Maybe it's more maybe it's a little more simple. Like to a coworker or a supervisor, mm-hmm. to say, mm-hmm. I was going over my behavior and it wasn't acceptable to me. And is there anything I could have done better? What do you think of, like, are there?
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was first going through, I had a note card. I was very, very structured. Today, I don't necessarily do that, but Okay, that's all. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much, both for your reflection and for your question. Great, great stuff. And I actually do have a little note that I have here in my so what I do is I have an index box, and I keep my index cards in the box, and then I also keep, like, any notes, like any kind of, like, scripted things that I feel like kind of worked for me at one point. I kind of just keep it in there, and that helps me when I want to review, like, hey, I need to make some amends, and I kind of, like, go through and stuff. And so one of the notes that I have is, in a business situation, kind of like what you were just talking about, it's like it's almost like more like more like a 10-step where it's like I'm kind of watching, so I can come back to that person maybe the next day or maybe later on that day or maybe just an hour later or whatever and be like, you know, come to my attention. I like saying it that way. I could come to my attention that, you know, fill in the blank. Come to my attention that I, or, you know, I was reflecting upon some of the, you know, the way that I just spoke to you a little while ago or yesterday or whatever, and I really want to apologize for how I spoke to you. You know, how I acted was about me. It wasn't about you. And sometimes, like when I'm doing it, and this is more, I would say, I think what you're talking about is a kind of a 10-step thing, I think, because it's kind of like, you know, in like that daily experience of watching. And sometimes an apology is actually, you know, you can kind of say apologize, like I want to apologize. I sometimes will use that, and I kind of know that I'm using the word apologize, but it doesn't feel like, it's almost like to use the word amend and to make it really formal would actually be not serving to the situation. And so I think that's, Lauren, what you're speaking
into
there. Yeah,
that's very helpful.
Yeah.
That actually, I have used that more informal way of making the amends in my daily 10-step. And, oh, yeah, the word apology, I relate. I don't know if I've ever used that because it doesn't resonate with me today. It just seems like what I used to do, which was I want to make this amend so I'll be free of it. Like I'm sorry. And it was I didn't have a good motive for saying that. And it was kind of an excuse in a way. Like, I don't know. But maybe I have to do some – maybe I'm blocking. Okay. Well, thank you, and I'll pass.
Great. Thanks so much. And the last thing that I will say about all of that is that I still, even if it's in that informal environment, here's the difference. I will still say, is there anything that I can do to make it right? And so I will still follow through with our, you know, kind of format, which takes it to the next level. And I was having an informal conversation with some friends. This was a couple months back, and I said something. They were so gracious. I said something that was so rude in the middle of our conversation. Like, they had a little 2-year-old who was, like, starting to, like my car door was open, and she started to, like, pull stuff out of it or whatever. And I just was watching her, and I was like, come on, parents. Like, it just came out of my mouth. It was so rude. And they just sort of, like, glossed over it. But I left that conversation, and I was mortified that I had, like, been so disrespectful to them. And, you know, I called them later on, and I apologized for it. And they met me in the conversation. They were like, it almost made us laugh. It was so rude, you know. And I'm like, I was so sorry. I felt so horrible. But then I took it a step further. I said, do you want to tell me how that made you feel? And it, like, blew them away. Like, oh, wow. And then, you know, it, like, opened up this whole conversation. And then I said, and can you tell me, you know, is there anything I can do to set this right? And it, like, opened up another layer of the conversation. And it was really powerful to take something that was, like, so sort of real time. Like, it would have actually been easy for me to gloss over it entirely, but today I can't live that way inside. It eats me up inside. But it would have been, they would have let it slide with just the apology. But then because we know now about this amends process, like, I was able to kind of take it a level deeper, and we created in that moment everlasting bond and deeper friendship because of it. Anybody else have a question or a comment? Anybody else have somebody who they need to make an amends to and they want to do their step 8 in real time?
I mean, I always could if there's nobody else, Mrs. Lauren, but that's only coming to me if nobody else.
Well, you go ahead. Go ahead, and somebody can go right after you.
Okay. So this is a 8 step that I have went over. It's still not clear to me. It's with my friend Kevin. Now, I was told if it's a boy that you have sort of sensual feelings towards, to do it in a letter. This is a mini case where I don't feel guided to do that. This person is kind of nomadic, too, so his address is never permanent. He was a close friend of mine, and what came up for my amends was, I wasn't a good friend to you. I wasn't there for you like I should have been. You know, I wouldn't visit with him when he visited. I would cancel on many occasions, hang out, especially when I was in the food. Part of my flakiness. So the amends, I saw him in person. He came to visit Pittsburgh. It seemed kind of clear that it was a really informal way. You know, I said, Kevin, I don't like how I treated you as a friend. I wasn't there for you, and I should have been. And he's like, well, no biggie. I love you. And I felt like I'd never really got a chance to say, well, how did that make you feel, and what could I have done better? But I felt like it was pretty cleared up.
Mm-hmm.
Then, for some reason, I felt like the amend wasn't finished, and I wanted this perfect finalization. I messaged him, Kevin, is there a way I could send you a letter, just send you an amend, and do you have an address? He got back to me a couple months later, which was about 2 months ago. He said, do you still need my address? And I didn't get back to him, and this has been floating around in my 11th step of, I don't know what to do because I don't feel like a letter was guided, but maybe it's a little more complicated than it should have been. So that's all. Thank you.
So when you pray on it and you ask God to guide you, what are you hearing?
What I'm hearing is that a letter doesn't resonate with me with this particular person. What resonates is face-to-face contact, and it'll be my if that happens, it'll be my first face-to-face amend with a boy that I have had, intimacy about or feelings toward. But, yeah, and I don't know. What also resonates is I'm not even sure if it's, to make a formal amends as much as I was told sometimes an amends can just be the form of, spending time with a person. But I still want to offer him the space to say how I made him feel, and what is there any way I could have done it?
So Lauren,
okay, that's all.
Lauren, are you no, this is all good. It's just you said multiple things, so I just want to kind of are you interested in being with him, getting back together with him?
No.
No.
I don't
okay.
think so. Yeah.
Okay.
It's fun. Yeah.
Okay, so the desire, this kind of goes back to, because there's multiple things that are sort of coming up for me right now. the desire for you, because you actually worded it in a very interesting way. You're like, well, we had this interaction, and then he kind of was like, no, I love you, it's great, and I felt like it was complete, but then I wanted to be perfect, is what you said. And like, so that to me sounds like it's coming from a place of like, that's what I'm saying, like when you get quiet, like are you really feeling guided that you need to do an amends or that you just want to reconnect with this person in your life? So just kind of getting clear on that and like your motives, like God, please help me see the truth about my motives. And I don't know if you did a sex inventory on him. I don't know kind of where you are with that process, but
I did do one on him, and thank you for your help. What came up was I feel like I have some untied because he messaged me back about, do you still need my address to mail the letter to? And I didn't follow up on that. So.
Mhm. Yeah. I mean, in listening to it, like I'm also in the place of kind of like, gosh, it really sounds like really, you know, asking God to show you who God would have you be in this interaction, and help you see the truth about the harms that you've caused, and like really, really getting clear, on the harms and if you have done an amends, even though it wasn't the perfect amends, like if it feels like it's clear and you're getting that sense, then like you need to like let it go or ask God if there's further, you know, like something further that needs to happen. Maybe you pray for him every day or something like that. But okay.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Does anybody else have a question, want to go over a situation, have a comment?
Hi, Deb. It's Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Thank you very much for your talk and your prep for all of this. I wanted to acknowledge, too, something you said in the beginning, because I have gotten behind in my transcribing. And, you know, from someone who's done this one other time before, there is a huge difference when it's not transcribed versus, you know, I did it exactly I got off track exactly where you talked about getting off track. It was in the inventory when, you know, every week we're not exactly transcribing. And so I need to get caught up. So I haven't really formally done my seventh step yet. I'm in process, and I've definitely been considering the portion of my fifth step that I've given. So I'm not there yet, but the one thing I noticed, and maybe we could, I know we're almost out of time, but I wanted to take one of my resentments and harms and maybe work it through as an example. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, on my mom, which I realized the fourth column was never discussed. We got so on track with the third column. So it was out of place. And so, and that's kind of an important one, but I just think it's kind of funny. But the harm is that, or at least my perceived harm without going over it with somebody, I avoided her. I avoid her. I'm not calling her as often as I should. I've been putting others in front of seeing her, making others a priority. So it's like, and I haven't gotten to the point where I prayed about this or even written the cards. Mm-hmm. I'm not there yet. But so I haven't even gone to God with this yet. As far as how do I make the approach without making things worse, you know?
Mhm. Yeah. Thank you so much I hear your willingness to like want to have an example, and this is such a good example because like I mean I'm sure every single person on this call and who's going to listen to this from here to come like can relate to him. They've got someone in their life who they have this kind of scenario with, and so you know first off what I love in just like the languaging of the way that you're talking about this is like the fear. Do you hear how your fear is what's coming first in this? you're like, well, I'm afraid of, like, you know, creating, making it worse or whatever. But, like,
right.
And, you know, like, this is, and I know what you said, you haven't sat with God here yet. And I feel like when you do, and this is why, it's almost so beautiful because you're actually speaking at it from the place of not having done the seven steps, you know, in that way. Because, I mean, I know that you know this work like the back of your hand, and, you know, and yet, like, your experience right now is of the experience of, well, I'm coming at it from here, and I haven't sat with God, and I'm not in it. So I don't know how to not create more harm in this. And I know you, and I know that on the other side of your seventh step, you're going to be feeling connected to God, and you are going to sit in it, and you are going to feel guided. With that said, I have had that. So when you say that the fear is there, are you saying that, you think that if you say to her, I want to make an amends for not being there for you, is there a part of you that's fearing that you're not going to be able to follow through with doing different? Or, like, can you speak into that a little bit more?
The fear isn't in that. It's more admitting that I put others in front of her. Like, do I actually say that? I mean, would that statement cause more harm versus just saying, I haven't been there for you in the way I should? It's more about that last statement of putting others in front of seeing you. It's almost like my first amends to her when I was going over it with my sponsor. You know, I used to lie for my dad and in his indiscretions against my mom. And so I had that in the harms list. And I remember my sponsor say, no, you do not tell her that. That will create more harm. You know, it's more the behavior. So it's more in that vein that I'm asking.
Yeah. So thank you for clarifying, and I'm sorry if I went on a tangent right there. It was probably more about me than it was about you. So, what I do is it's kind of like putting myself in that person's shoes. It's like I imagine, okay, so I was over here doing this action. What was the person experiencing from me? So were they experiencing unavailability or not calling them back, or, you know what I mean? Like, what would their experience be of me? Because you're right. They don't need to know, like, oh, I prioritize other people over you, because that might feel harmful. But what do you think your mom's experience was of when you were prioritizing other people over her?
Feeling left out, feeling unimportant.
Okay. So, you know, and again, it's like, this is why I like to get really clear on my languaging, because can I make someone feel left out? Can I make them feel unimportant? Like, that kind of stuff is up for question, but there's ways that I can language it. You know, like, I feel like I might have left you with a feeling of being unimportant or something, you know, like I want to hear from you, you know, but these are the ways that we can, and we can fine tune this too, you know, obviously after you've done, you know, finished these steps and had your own meditation on it, and if you're still unclear, but it's a really, really good thing that you bring up right there, because go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry, I didn't mean to stop you. But just in what you're saying about in the languaging of it, that's so important, because I for sure needed that in my first amends process. I mean, I did. I did not have clarity on that, even with going to God. And I really did need human help with someone who's done it before me to help language it with someone. So like you said and talked about in the beginning of your talk, you know, really practicing this, and after going to God, you know, working it through with a step guide or sponsor, especially if we're new in this, and this is only my second time around doing the work, it's really important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Great. Cool. Well, I know that we are over time a little bit. I can't even see. Yeah, maybe a minute over time. Great. So thank you, everybody, for just being available, being on this call. And if you have additional questions about the step that were not addressed today, feel free to email me. I do not claim to be an expert in this stuff, but I can definitely also defer to some other people who I really, really respect a lot. Let us close the meeting with goodness. Let's do the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee,
to
deal with me, and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Thank you so much for sharing this time with me and taking this time for you. And I will see you next week for steps 10 and steps 11. Bye-bye.
Hey, Deb, 1 second.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say I've been on every call, but there is a 90% chance I'm not going to be on live next week. And I'm so sorry that I just thought I would tell you just in case we don't hook up during the week. I'll try, but I don't think I can.
Thank you. And I recently spoke. I have so many voice recordings, you guys. I just haven't been sending out because I don't want to, like, overwhelm everybody. But I've been speaking a lot recently. I have a talk on step 10 that I have been waiting to send out to you guys. Yeah, so I will send that out this week. And I'll also send out some of the things. I literally recorded 3 voice memos this morning because they just came through and I just did, and you'll kind of get those at various points. But, yeah. So I
boundaries.
Will send that out.
What on boundaries I'm interested in.
I did, yes. Boundaries.
Oh, no, thank you.
I know, right? Yeah, balance and boundaries. I know, I did. I was channeling you. Okay, anyway. All right, everyone.
Okay.
I'm going to end the recording. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.